Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 148 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacke. Thanks for joining me again. Today on the show, we've got lots of stuff to go through, specifically this article that had been floating around from Bloomberg News that was, I guess, supposed to be a hit piece on the CCFR, and then changed a little bit. I got a whole bunch of background information for you on that. It's kind of interesting. And of course, we're going to have Wilson on, and we've got all kinds of different updates to share with you. But before we get started, I just want to thank some of the businesses in our community that support the CCFR Radio Podcast. Bullseye North stocks a wide variety of guns, ammo, optics, knives, and accessories from all the big brands and offers free shipping nationwide on orders over $200. Some conditions apply. Sign up for their weekly newsletter to get zeroed in on their weekly deals and live inventory. Bullseye North is your sports shooting superstore. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS Academy online courses. This online training is valuable to anyone that pursues sporting or outdoor activities or finds value in being prepared for a crisis. Visit ctomsacademy.skillbuilder.co and use promo code CCFR30 for a 30% discount on all training. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. All right, we're back. So I got a couple of updates, a couple of things to chat with you about before I bring Wilson on and we get into the things we're going to chat with her about. First thing is, yes, we are back on the regular schedule, so you will be seeing the CCFR Radio Podcast every 2 weeks, as usual, all the way around the calendar till like next June. So, you know, with rare exception, probably it would be 3 weeks between a podcast, maybe around Christmas. So you get a couple of months before that happens. And then, I don't know, if we're indisposed for whatever reason, right? If we're in court or whatever. So other than that, you'll see it every 2 weeks. And we will be here making sure that you're fully informed about everything that's going on that affects your ability to legally own and use firearms. Because that's really important stuff too, as you well know. Now, I was able to get a little bit of rest on the summer. I put myself on what I would consider light duty. I didn't literally take holidays because, for one, I don't think that we can do that. I mean, I could probably get away with a week or two straight kind of thing, but it just wasn't necessary because I didn't travel anywhere. But I basically did whatever was absolutely necessary to get done, plus the usual stuff that I do, which is kind of creating projects and what are we going to do when we come back in September and all the rest of that stuff. And I did want to share with you that we have three projects coming up. Two of them are pretty big. And it is kind of eating at me that I can't share those with you yet because they're not ready to go. They haven't launched yet. But I'm hoping that I'll be able to share at least one of them with you in the next podcast. Don't hold me to that. It is not a promise because these things are a lot of work. But I'm hoping I'll be able to do that. So anyway, stay tuned for that. We are still waiting for our court decision. The last day of our hearings were in April. It's now September. Still nothing from the court. Now, I'm not going to start speculating about why that is or speculating about the motives here. I'm just hoping that it's because the judge is taking her time to come up with a proper, just decision and that my faith is not in the judicial system in Canada is not misplaced. As you know, it's difficult right now for that not to happen with all the controversy around courts. But right now, that's how we're moving forward on that assumption that, you know, if the government didn't have the authority to do what they did, if it was not legal to do, that the judge will find that as the case and roll back that OIC because they clearly didn't have the authority to do it. So I'm hoping that, and I'm hoping that there's no artificial stalling going on in order to give the government an opportunity to paper it over with a bill so that, you know, somehow we get screwed over. I'm erring on the side that the Canadian judiciary is not playing those games with its citizens. So anyway, the minute that we hear anything about the case, I will let you know. Okay. Now, next thing is Bill C-21 will now be examined in the Senate, right? So if you remember where we left off in the fall, the bill is already in the Senate and has been slated for committee hearings. So we will be participating in that process. We'll be bringing you all those meetings as well. We'll be making sure that you're fully informed, but that's where it starts. And at its very earliest, it would start sometime at the end of September if Bill C-21 is the top priority for the Senate. Okay, so we don't know that. But anyway, with any luck, good or bad, I guess, right, their bill may pass and receive royal assent before Christmas. It would be very unusual for it to take more than by Christmas to happen, right? It could even be done in a I don't know, by the end of October. So anyway, cross your fingers that it's very slow and it's a difficult journey through the Senate process because it's a bad bill. It's bad for basically everybody. It shouldn't be there. It's a political tool is what it is. And so hopefully the Senate will give it the scrutiny that the bill deserves. Anyway, that's we'll keep you advised of what that schedule is. And I also wanted to mention that at the end of this episode in the outro, okay, so after our chat with Tracy, I'm going to give you kind of the clip of the week. I got a really good one. And it really kind of illustrates the challenges of having a proper conversation about an honest, mature conversation about firearm ownership, legal firearm ownership in Canada, and violent crime involving firearms, right? Those two things are separate. They overlap very lightly, but they're separate things. And it's just going to just show you why it's so difficult for us to just sit down and talk like adults, like honest human beings, which is how we should strive to behave, I think. I've got some old ideas that are way outdated, I guess, for the in our society. But anyway, it's a really good clip, so make sure you hang around at the end for that one. Okay, so that's all the updates that I have for you for now. Let's get Wilson on and talk about some pretty interesting stuff. All right, via Skype, we've got Ms. Tracy Wilson. Wilson!
I miss that. Well, we haven't seen each other in so long.
I don't miss saying it.
Well, too bad. I like hearing it, so just
so
keep doing
bad.
It.
So anyway, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, and we have one topic that we're going to talk about for probably 15 minutes, and I'm being optimistic, because it's worth, it's such an interesting conversation that we're going to have, that we should get started on this right away. So I've got a couple of things to cover, but this is the most important, so we're going to do it first. Lot of people have been contacting us over the last month, or whatever it's been, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, it seems like time travels so quickly. About this news article that was in Bloomberg News. And it was about the Canadian gun lobby. And so this article was written by a number of authors, led, I guess, by David Kochaneski, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist for investigative journalism. Like, he's won 2 Pulitzer Prizes. So, you know, this guy's the real deal. He's the real thing. So, you know, you wouldn't expect this to be fake news or disinformation or some kind of piece just absolutely rife with inaccurate and flat out not true information. I guess you could say lies, right?
I guess you could say that.
But the backstory really quick is that this guy, I don't know, about 5 months ago, contacted one of my old business partners that I owned a business in Quebec with back in like 2009 to 2012, maybe something like that. And my old business partner calls me up because we stay in touch and he's like, hey, you know, there's a reporter from Bloomberg called me and wanted to know about you and what you're like to work with and the kind of person you are and all the rest of that stuff. And he goes, I mean, he's legit. And I'm like, well, send me his contact info. And I looked him up because I wasn't sure if that was a journalist, right? I looked him up. Right. Sure enough, it's him. And then, so I forgot about him for a while. And then he pops up again a little while ago. And so he contacted me, said he's doing a story on the Canadian gun lobby and this ATF tracing report, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms in the United States. And I'm like, yeah, I'll talk to you. And I spent 2 hours on a Zoom meeting with him, 2 hours going through every single aspect of his story. So anyway, all right. So let's kick this off. Just so everyone knows, I'm going to find the exact verbiage. This is the title of the story that eventually came out. Here it is. NRA style politics. Where have I heard NRA style before, right? Transformed mm-hmm. Canada's gun culture, and shootings rose 869%.
So it's attributed yeah. to the, you know, creation and work of the CCFR versus like repeat violent offenders, soft on crime bail system. That's got nothing to do with it. Yeah. It's us.
That's exactly what's going on. Oh. It's the NRA influencing us. And that's the reason that shootings have risen that percentage, right? So they give you the conclusion ahead of time. Now, remember, this is not, you know, this is not the Toronto Star. This is not, you know, the what's that paper in Montreal that printed all that garbage just a while ago that we're not through with them yet. The Journal de Montreal or something like that.
Yeah, Journal de Montreal. Yeah. Yeah.
That's not, this is Bloomberg. This is big stuff. And Kochineski is the real deal. So pretty surprising. Anyway, so the main claim that they're talking about is a third of guns used in Canadian crimes and then traced by authorities were legally imported from the U.S. That's 3 times the global average. So they're trying to say it's our gun culture that has created all these domestic firearm problems, basically. These are all these crime guns are coming from domestic sources. So that's kind of the idea. So let's, the first aspect of it we're going to talk about, it's kind of a complicated thing, right? So it's, you're going to have to just bear with me, is the data tracing. So they were going to, I think it was pretty clear that they were going to write a hit piece about us. And to use the phrase NRA style, it's like, where have you seen that before, right? The docs, Pauly says, everybody.
All of them.
Well, Marco Menachino, the rest of these, you know, numbskulls, they all use this terminology, NRA style, to try to attach us to the NRA when no attachment, no connection exists. And in fact, sorry, I don't mean to capitalize the conversation, but I forgot to say something. He asked me directly during that 2 hours, we probably spent 5-10 minutes on it. Do you have any connection to the NRA in the United States? And I said, absolutely not. We haven't had any conversations. We have never had an introduction. They have not helped us in any way or contacted us in any way. And not that that's entirely bad. It's just, there's no benefit for us as a firearm organization in Canada to have any relationship or connection with them. They can't give us money. Anything that they know or their techniques won't apply in Canada because the law is completely different. The culture is completely, it's just, there's no benefit for us.
No. And their constitution actually prohibits them from working in Canada anyways. But yeah, it's boogeymanning, right? It's trying to put some sort of dark shadow on us. That's totally untrue. And he did ask you specifically, it says in the article that he asked you about funding, collaboration, you know, those kinds of things. You answered no. And still he says that we are NRA inspired.
Yeah. I mean, but I guess it's exactly what you would have expected, though I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, it's a strange time in human history right now.
Sure is.
So I guess an afterthought was this data tracing report that came out from the ATF that came to that conclusion that a third of all the guns that they were requested to trace by Canadian authorities were legally imported at some point into Canada. So basically, what does that translate into? It's like, well, a third of guns used in crime in Canada were legally imported. So they're domestically sourced in a way, right? This is what the anti-gunners need people to believe for them to support banning guns and assaulting people like you and I.
Right. And it's the whole purpose of this story, which of course has spurred a whole bunch of other stuff, is to sort of, discredit the fact that the majority of crime guns used in Canada are illegally smuggled. And in order to do that, they've used this data in that manner. The most important fact that blows that out of the water is the ATF only traces guns from Canada that were not prohibited and not registered.
Yeah, well, this is a really interesting point. And it was, I think it was Tim Thurley that brought that point forward. At least I think that's where you saw it. And you
that's where I saw it. I learned a lot from him.
He's awesome. And same thing with Noah Schwartz, right? And you alerted me to this. I'm like, is that true? So in fact, you're looking at it on your screen right now. This is what the ATF said about this tracing
report. It's right in the report.
Yeah, it says, Canadian law classifies numerous firearms as prohibited. So short barrel handguns, full autos, stuff like that. Canada only submits trace requests to the ATF of recovered firearms that are not registered or prohibited. So they're not submitting any prohibs. So let's have a look at this. Interesting. So the Toronto Police Service, if you go look on Twitter, now X, the Toronto Police Service have a Twitter feed, and it's called Toronto Police Service Guns Seized, hashtag off the streets. These are all the guns that they seized. And if you look, even in their pinned tweet, it says right about here. Well, I think we can start at the top here. It says all of the guns posted here were seized by Toronto police officers in the course of their lawful duties. Some were used in shootings. Some were used to commit other crimes, but all were seized from people not lawfully allowed to possess them. So I'm going to wrap this up for you. Start looking down here. Take a look. If you know anything about guns, you know this when you look at it. Any handgun with a barrel less than 4 1/8 inches is a prohibited firearm anyway. Right. Okay. And so when you're looking at these, look at these first two, prohib. Next one, prohib. Scroll down, prohib. Next one, prohib. Next one, prohib. These are all prohibited firearms. Next one, prohib, prohib, prohib. Here's an old Tokarev. That could have come from anywhere, but that's possible that it came from Canada. Here's another one that's available in Canada. This is an SD9V, I believe. I have a couple of those. You got this 9mm rifle. I don't know what that is right off the bat. Here's a Model 17. Those are available in the States. They're available in Canada, so maybe. Then you have one with a suppressor, prohib. Another shorty, prohib. Another prohib, another prohib. another Model 7. You know what? That might be a prohib too. That looks a little short. That's definitely a prohib. Take a look at the one here with the next to all these 9mm. That's a prohib as well. I don't know what the hell this is. Snub-nosed, rusty revolver from the river. Sawed-off shotgun with a taped handle. Prohib, I guess. But there's another brand new prohib. Another prohib. Couple of 22s. I don't know what the deal was with that. Another short prohib. Like, it goes on and on. All prohibs. So basically, the upshot is what we're telling people right now is that all of the guns, basically, well, 95% of the guns seized by Toronto police are prohibs. Thus, they never would have asked for those guns to be traced because they knew that they came from the United States illegally anyway.
That's right. They never made it into this report. So that giant picture, that big, big pie, the ATF report only takes a tiny slice of it. So if you actually take that data and put it back into the big pie, it shows very, very few guns used in crime or seized in Canada were legally imported. Very, very few.
Well, yeah.
So it's a manipulation of the data. I think Tim Thurley called it a statistical choice that the author made to just use that tiny little slice instead of looking at the majority of crime guns, right?
Absolutely. So if you were to add all those prohibs back on, maybe it's just like Toronto police have said.
92% is what TPS says.
Yeah, like something like 95%, 92%, something like that. And I believe there was even one quote that was like 99% or 98%, all illegally imported from the United States. So, and I'll even give them the benefit of the doubt. Take all those prohibs out there and look at that tiny group of firearms that you have left. And they're saying only 30% of those were domestically sourced. Yeah. You know what I mean? They were exported legally into Canada. Isn't that interesting?
And 20% of those traced guns were actually shotguns, which that's like the biggest number were shotguns. So that sort of blows the idea of using this data to support or prop up a handgun ban. It doesn't support it either. So it's just you take this piece of data, cut it all away, and just get this one little narrative and run with it to influence people and then blame it on us. And it's, you know, it would it would actually be humorous if it didn't have such tragic results, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, and you know, it's funny because the ATF, I mean, they're smarter than, you know, some people would give them credit for, because if you look, the ATF even puts in a disclaimer.
Yes.
And that disclaimer is right here. Not all firearms used in crime are traced, and not all firearms traced are used in crime in this report. Right. So basically they're saying, you know, you asked for this trace, but just to be clear, it might, this gun may have never been used in a crime.
Yeah.
So you have,
I think it goes on to say something else too, that this is like, this cannot be used as a statistical evaluation of the overall view of what crime guns, which guns are used for crimes.
That's right.
It goes on to say that.
Yeah, so. It says right here, firearms selected for tracing are not chosen for purposes of determining which types, makes, or models of firearms are used for illicit purposes. And most importantly, the firearms selected do not constitute a random sample and should not be considered representative of the larger universe of all firearms used by criminals or any subset of that universe. They say it flat out.
They say it flat out, and Bloomberg took that, cut it out, just totally ignored it, scrapped it, and literally said, okay, here's the data.
Yep.
It's insane. Yep. It's insane that he even wrote this article.
It's the gun lobby and licensed gun owners that have driven shootings up 1,000%, basically.
Nobody believes that anyways. Nobody's going to believe that, because it's just, it's so offensive and ridiculous that nobody believes that.
Yeah.
This is just nothing but a hit piece out of a billionaire-owned Manhattan-based media firm. It's absolutely coordinated.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second too. But you know what's interesting is, and we've seen this, whether it was Marcel from the One by One movement, Marcel Wilson. How could I forget his last name? Marcel Wilson. Right. You know, he used to be a darling of Pauli Sessuvier and the rest of them when he was on side with them. And the minute he starts looking at the issue and seeing, it's like, all this attention is banning guns. And, you know, the people in my community are still getting gunned down in the street. This is ridiculous. We need diversion projects. We need to deal with the root causes. As soon as he started talking like that, Pauli Sessuvier turned on him and started slandering him on Twitter. If you remember, I tweeted about that. I just looked up the tweet, but I'm not going to read it for you. It's a waste of time. But and they turned on other people. We won't mention any names, but other victims of violence that were with that group and were doing their bidding, whatever, like 6-7 years ago, that decided, you know what? I think you're actually on the wrong side. I don't think you're helping at all. And then they're excommunicated and they get slandered. Well, Pauli Sessuvier decides to go after Noah Schwartz, who is
Dr. Noah Schwartz,
right? A very respected figure in academia and a full-fledged expert on this topic.
I think literally an expert.
Yeah, he's written a book on it. He's written several reports. I think he even has one that's peer-reviewed. And then you have Tim Thurley, who's done excellent work. And these guys show their work. They don't make claims like some other academics, as it were, that are involved in gun control, make these, you know, spurious claims and then don't want to show any work. Check this out. Here they go and they're like, and this is how they describe Noah Schwartz and Tim Thurley, because they don't agree. Of course, the hashtag gun lobby and their fake gun experts will continue to deny. So think about...
That's nuts. Fake gun experts?
Think about what it takes for you to call somebody that. Like a fake gun expert? I don't know.
I think they seem to think they're the experts and nobody else can be an expert or have an opinion that varies from theirs, or they're just going to slander you all over social media. It's insane to me.
You know, on our TV show and on this podcast, we've put out example after example after example of the types of human beings that a lot of these people are, like the way they behave. It really is astounding. And it just, they never disappoint. Like we won't even get into it because we have so much more to cover, but you and I were just commenting, if you look at Pauli's feed right now, it's like unhinged. Same thing with the docs.
They're losing their mind.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And we're gonna show one of these two crazy tweets from the docs too. I don't know what's wrong with these people, but anyway, you're gonna see it. So, of course, in the story, they want to connect us with the NRA. We talked about that already, but of course, they have to paint us as evil. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm not gonna put up a bunch of examples, but they had must have contacted the docs. They contacted Polly or whatever. They're like, oh, look at all these names and all this these terrible exchanges that the CCFR has had with these poor doctors and this poor victims group. And it's like, well, what precipitated those comments, right?
Right.
And so I said to him, he had questioned me about all of them that they put in the story. And I said, no, the reason why that tweet or that comment was made was this. And I sent links. I'm going to show you the email. Here's the email. I sent links and videos and a report that we did and just all this stuff. And guess how much of it made it into the article?
I'm going to bet zero.
Not one stitch of it. Mm-hmm. Not one stitch.
No, it's going to focus entirely on my mean tweets or things we've said. Just a completely one-sided version of the story, despite the fact that he was literally given every bit of evidence to back that stuff up. So,
yeah, like I will bet you this is a $50,000 article. Like,
yeah,
the amount of information there and the time that he spent over the last 5 months or whatever it's been, bet you it's at least $100,000 article.
Oh, yeah.
And it just,
well, he's got a lot of money.
Trash.
It doesn't matter.
Like, you might as well, you know, if this was on your server, you'd be probably wise to delete it because you could put some like memes or something on there using that space on your hard drive. Like, that's the level, in my opinion, of this. It's really something. And I think it really speaks to what do these people have? At the end of the day, what do we have and what do they have in this argument? I don't know. Like, literally, they got nothing.
I think it's important too. Like, I'll admit I didn't know a lot about Bloomberg before they started digging around in our lives and writing this story. He's got ties. He's a financial backer for Everytown for gun safety or against gun violence.
Well,
I'm not sure what it's called.
I have that.
Yeah, it's an American anti-gun organization. So, you know, I don't think any of this is coincidental.
Well, have a look. I'll read it right now. But this is at the very bottom of the story. So this is them, you know, keeping their integrity. Everytown for Gun Safety, which advocates for gun safety measures, is backed by Michael Bloomberg, founder and majority owner of Bloomberg News parent Bloomberg LP. So
yeah,
it's basically an anti-gun organization through and through. But anyway, at least when it comes to this kind of stuff. And so there's so much in this article that we could talk about. Like, there, I don't know, we could spend probably 40 minutes talking about all the inaccuracies, but here's a couple of other interesting things.
Yeah.
That they got completely wrong. They said that you were a lawyer.
Yeah, Michael Loberg actually emailed me to congratulate me on my call to the bar. I'm not a lawyer.
No.
I know where he got that, though. And I noticed it a couple of weeks ago. I was looking up something or whatever, and there was a Wikipedia page about Canadian, you know, gun organizations or whatever, and the CCFR was in there. And it said that the CCFR was founded by Tracy Wilson, an Ottawa area lawyer. And I was like, what? What? So I didn't write the page, obviously. It shows who wrote it. But I would, you know, I don't understand how to correct that information. So the point of that is you've got this Bloomberg reporter who's using Wikipedia as a source to get information about people. He never asked me, what did you do previous to the CCFR? He never asked me that.
Check nothing. He just put it
in. No, check nothing.
Yeah.
Just used Wikipedia and put down that I'm a lawyer. I mean, yeah, I look forward to my rise to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, well, I think you have to do one of those $1,500 dinners for Justin Trudeau before you get appointed.
I'll do it.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, it even gets worse because he said that I'm an HVAC engineer.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's worse is he asked me about my career, and we probably talked about it for 10, 15 minutes. He knows exactly what I did for a living. Plus, you can go to LinkedIn. I think that's all public, and you see my whole resume in there, right? It's like I've never been an HVAC engineer. I worked in business development and, you know, some venture stuff.
International business.
And, yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
So, you know, firearms instructor for the RCMP Canadian Firearms Program. Like, it's all there. Anyway, just really, really something. It's quite remarkable.
It is something, eh?
And then, of course, they have this picture of the Integrity March. So,
Couple people.
Yeah, exactly, right? So they put down here, like, gun supporters of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights at a march at Parliament Hill on September the 12th, 2020. And it's, I guess they didn't have this picture. They didn't have access to this one either, I guess. They didn't have access to this one, certainly, which you can see our march going around the entire block of Parliament Hill. And actually the front of the parade meeting the tail of it.
Oh yeah. We were so big. We wrapped around and we were coming up back onto the hill, and the people on the tail end hadn't even done the march yet. They hadn't even left.
Yeah. They hadn't got off the lawn yet.
No, they couldn't even get off the lawn.
You know, anyway, well,
but whatever.
Yeah. So the only,
it's exactly as I expect.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, I know we're all sitting here going like, well, of course you'd expect this. It's like, it's still, and I've said it so many times, people are probably sick of hearing it. It still amazes me, people's capacity for self-deception and to tell lies, especially when they tell lies. And then they're like, you know, don't believe all these other guys in their lies. Like, you're literally lying about saying that other people are lying. Like, just, I don't know that behavior. I just don't know how people live with themselves, sit at home and be like, yeah, I'm a good person and I'm nailing it and I'm doing the right thing, when they just talk this kind of crap all the time. It's just quite wild. But there is one thing that they did get right. Check this out. down here somewhere, let me have a look. It is, here it is. It says, the CCFR's first directors included Tracy Wilson, a registered lobbyist dubbed the gun goddess by Canadian newspapers, and Rogil Taka, who'd worked at I worked as an HVAC engineer, apparently. Here's the accurate part. In just a few short years, they orchestrated a remarkable rise to influence.
That part is 100% verifiably true.
Thanks, Dave, and other authors of the piece. You got something right. So
yeah, they got something right.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, we could talk about it for a lot longer, because there was so much more that was absolutely deceiving. And I mean, I guess, you know, let's bring it around again, and I'm going to show it again. There's the cover. NRA style politics transformed Canada's gun culture, and shootings rose 869%. That's the connection right there.
You know, this is actually, like, you know, joking aside, whatever, this is actually pretty dangerous, because there are real violent criminals out there shooting real innocent people. It happens all the time. Like, we've got moms getting shot outside clinics, and terrible things are happening because we're so focused on chasing around gun owners that we're not doing the work on the root causes. And that's the result. So to spin that around and try and blame it on gun owners or gun culture or the CCFR is not only disingenuous, but it is dangerous.
Well, yeah, of course it shifts the focus away, but it has a ripple effect, you know, and the, you know, our political adversaries like to talk, oh, the ripple effect of this, that, and the other thing. It's like, well, listen, when you guys lie and you make fools of yourselves, like you did in this article and like you did in these tweets, and you say all these histrionic, hair on fire, lunatic stuff, and I'm going to show, we're going to actually talk about a couple of the tweets, right? But when you do things like that, it causes people to lose faith in institutions, because, like, the government's, like, literally lying to me. They're literally lying to me while they tell me that everyone else is lying. And especially when you have a doctor's group that habitually lies and misrepresents information and studies, and they're caught all the time. Like, this is why they'll never sit down with me for a conversation, even if we're going to donate $15,000 to a charity. Like, there's no way. There's a real problem.
No,
if you can't just sit down and have a conversation with someone, or you can't debate them, or you have to resort to slandering them or trying to paint them as evil so that people don't listen to them. Like, you got a real problem with your argument if that's what you're resorting to. And that's what we see with these people, you know? I mean, we've proven time and time again, we can sit down and talk with anybody.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I think, too, it's damaging to the overall relationships. You're right. Government, law enforcement, in particular right now with those guys, doctors. Like, how does that affect a person's relationship with their doctor when you've got people who are doctors who act that way?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's unnecessary and it's not helpful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So anyway, we'll give you an example of this stuff. So we got a Doc's tweet. Let me have a look here. All right, here's a beauty. I'm going to read it. So, of course, they found some great disinformation, in my opinion, which was the Bloomberg article. And so they're just like this article, to be honest, is like catnip for dum-dums, right? It's just like, okay, NRA style, definitely that's why shootings are up, right? So they love spreading this stuff. And I'm not even sure that they read it. But they call this article a must-read, I guess, if you love disinformation. The NRA and Canadian gun groups bullied their way onto the country's political agenda. That's Canada they're talking about, with devastating results.
What?
Show me those results. Devastating results. Like, this is coming from a doctor's group.
Wow.
Like, I want to know whose teenager is running their Twitter account. Like, this is crazy. Wow. These are doctors?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's insane. First of all, I'd rather not be in this debate, but I'm in it because the government won't leave me alone. At the end of the day, I just want to be left alone. You've said it many times, but to turn around and say the devastating results, and what they're referencing there is the massive rise in violence and shootings in this country by unlicensed criminals, but they're just circling that square and putting it straight on our back, right? Which is.
These are some pretty remarkable people. Pretty remarkable. And so here's another tweet. Now, this is an excerpt from the article, and it's another piece of the article that was total fiction, right? Total fiction. But they're like, oh, we love this fiction because it lines up with what we think. So we're going to actually use our platform as doctors to spread it around so that people believe it. So I'll read it real quick. What little tracing is done shows that weapons are only rarely smuggled from the U.S. Like the complete inverse of the truth, right? It's far easier to steal them, obtain them secondhand, or find a straw buyer in a region where hunting, recreational shooting, and gun stores are a part of daily life. Like nothing could be less accurate than that. And when it comes to straw purchasing, if you've been watching us for a while, you know we hired... we hired one independent researcher and we got data from another independent researcher, so two people, to determine how many times straw purchasers have been caught selling guns in Canada. And it's like somewhere for the last 22 years, it's somewhere around like 50 licensed gun owners in the whole country. In fact,
out of millions of people.
Out of
were caught.
Well, the numbers we used was around 3 million people that have held a license during that period. So 50 people out of 3 million, which was somehow the math. It was in our television, limited television series, Gun Ban Canada Exposed. You can find that on the YouTube channel. But basically it works out to 7/10,000ths of 1% or something like that of gun owners engaging in that activity. It's straw purchasing is the smallest. It is the least as far as quantity source for crime guns in Canada. Mm-hmm. By far. It's like somewhere around.
Well, and they're saying, oh, it's far easier to just do it.
Yeah. And the stolen guns and that the very few guns are illegally imported, used in crimes. Like the total antithesis of the truth. Amazing.
Amazing is right.
Yeah.
Like amazing in a really bad, bad, dishonest, dirty way.
Yeah. These people are truly amazing when it comes to that. Like it's astounding. All right.
Yeah.
Now we've had enough of talking about those types of people. Let's talk about something kind of fun. You and I are going to be at TACOM this coming weekend, and we're also going to the Conservative Party of Canada Policy Convention. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so once again, I mean, it's almost a flashback to last year where we had TACOM on the same weekend as the CPC leadership race. And you'll remember I did, you know, a crazy roundabout tour so I could be at TACOM and also be at leadership. So we're going to do it again this year. So you and I are heading to beautiful Quebec City. We are going to be attending the CPC Policy Convention, of course, looking after the best interests of Canadian gun owners from coast to coast. We're going to be there on the Thursday and Friday. I think we're coming in Wednesday night. We're going to be there Thursday and Friday. We're going to get up really early Saturday and get a bright and early flight out of Quebec City into Toronto so that you and I can be at TACOM Saturday and Sunday. Now, don't worry, guys. We've got volunteers manning the booth on the Friday, so it will be it will be open and operational. We'll be there first thing Saturday morning and all day Saturday and Sunday. We're at booth 1641, same place as last year. If you were in there, we'll have swag, memberships. We're going to have a whole table of stuff that you can win in contests. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I think I'm going to be doing a brief speech as well.
Yeah, I'm going to do one too with the ladies of our community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, we're going to be flying around like crazy so that we can actually be there. So I think we'll be there on Saturday afternoon. Right?
Well, our flight gets in, I think, 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. And the airport's right by the convention center. So, yeah, we'll dump off our stuff and head over and we'll be there.
Yeah, that sounds good. So if you want to check that out and see us at TACOM, so be there somewhere around 12 or 1 in the afternoon on Saturday, and we'll be there Sunday as well, as you said. And we'll also have a report in the next podcast about the Conservative Party policy convention and how that went, as well as TACOM 2. Now,
yes.
Last thing we have on our list, I mean, we've got a lot, we had a whole list of things that we talk about on the podcast, but that Bloomberg article and the behavior that it promoted or provoked in all of these anti-gunners wanting to spread all this disinformation, you know, kind of took a lot of the time. So we don't want to talk about a lot of that stuff. But what's really important is Field Officer of the Month throughout the summer. So for June and July, I think you have that information, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I got a great email here from Chris Russell. He's the VP of the Field Officer Program. So he's kind of the boss of the volunteers. And June's Field Officer of the Month was Mark LaFond, and he's local here to me in Ontario. Chris says here, Mark jumped all in as a volunteer with the CCFR. If he can be there, he is, sometimes driving great distances to work as many shows as he can. And that's true. I've seen that guy drive 8 hours and come and volunteer from the setup all the way down to the teardown. He's just awesome. Chris met him for the first time at the AGM this year. And guess where he found him? Working behind the merch booth at AGM, volunteering as always. So he says, thank you for all your hard work, Mark. Mark, you will be receiving a $100 gift voucher for the CCFR swag store and our eternal love and support. And July's recipient is Cam Atchison. And now he's from the Alberta team. And Chris says, Cam has single-handedly manned a CCFR table at some of our largest shows south of Calgary. Always a pleasure to speak with and eager to share what our community faces. Glad to have you on the team, Cam. So you will also receive the same prize as Mark. So those are our guys for the summer, June and July. And I think in an upcoming podcast, we'll talk about the August Field Officer of the Month. So thank you to all of our team from coast to coast who gets out there all weekend long and just helps us out.
Yeah. And well, I've worked with Mark too, and he's awesome. I'm sure I've met Cam before, but you know, there's not a lot of room up here. I'm working with very limited resources upstairs here. So, but I can't thank all the people that volunteer for the CCFR enough, because we just can't do any of those things without volunteers. So it's hard for me to even express the level of gratitude that I have, because we would be nothing compared to what we are today without all these people stepping forward, taking their own personal time to do things to help promote and support the CCFR. So thank you guys very much for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We get a lot of thank yous, you and I, when we go to, TACOM or Toronto Sportsman Show or the Calgary Easter Gun Show or some of the stuff we attend. People are like, oh, thank you for what you do. And I always kind of take that with a grain of salt, because when they're thanking me, I feel like they're thanking our whole team, because you're right, we couldn't do it without them. So yeah, I'm grateful to have them.
Absolutely. Awesome. So congratulations, guys. Thanks for your work. And I think that's the end of our list for now.
All right. Well, that was a whole lot to swallow. But, yeah.
It was a little crazy.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, thanks for the update, and we will see you in 2 weeks. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode 148 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I have some comments, and of course, that clip that I promised you, the clip of the week. I call it clip of the week because I use it for the TV show. It's obviously, this doesn't come out every week. But anyway, the clip that I'm going to show you has our friend Talib Nur Muhammad, who suffers from a lot of the same shortcomings as our friends over the Canadian Doctors for Protection from Guns, as they call themselves. This clip is it's a fun one. It comes from when I was sitting across from him at the C21 hearings. And what he's trying to describe to me, what he's trying to smash me over the head with, trying to defeat me, is, hey, the Canadian chiefs of police came here and they said that they're in favor of Bill C-21 because, you know, basically support it. They support it because we're getting guns away from Canadians, right? We're banning guns and the cops are behind it, right? Because it's going to save lives. So it's funny. I'm trying to pull that over on me. So anyway, check out the clip we'll talk about in a second.
Law enforcement are coming before this committee and saying that fewer guns in homes will mean fewer people die.
So what else did they say?
Well, you're welcome to go back and listen to their testimony.
A very strong theme. Most people that are committing crime are with guns, are criminals that don't have the ability to possess them. So it's not law-abiding gun owners committing the majority of these crimes.
Mr. Chair, and as Chief Bray has said, I would certainly agree with our law-abiding citizens and the disturbing trends on gang and the data. So
I would not suggest it was effective for gun policy. City of Toronto's experience is the guns are not from law-abiding citizens that are being used in crime. They're guns smuggled from the United States. Those engaged in handling those firearms are not law-abiding licensed gun owners. They are criminals with no firearms license.
The vast majority of gun violence is perpetrated by people who are unlawfully in possession of illegal firearms.
There are handguns all over, they're all illegal, and they're in the hands of criminals. And that the people that legitimately own them, they're in safes and being taken to gun clubs. The two sections don't intersect.
But generally speaking, most of the laws we create are not going to be followed by the people that are committing the crimes with the guns. This issue is not law-abiding Canadians who want to own firearms. The issue really is people that are involved in criminal activity.
So, I mean, unless we all want to disagree with law enforcement, unless we want to say that the cops who are trying to keep our streets safe are wrong.
Ooh, Tlaib Noor Mohammed. Yeah, so there he is trying to gaslight me. You know, it's interesting, right? Because I guess he thought I was a liberal voter or one of the voters in his riding or something. And he just like gets all aggressive and gaslights me. And then I would just be like, okay, you're probably right. You know, but, you know, I guess, I don't know. He forgets. Maybe he thinks I'm incompetent. Maybe hasn't encountered somebody like me before. Maybe he forgets I do this stuff for a living. I don't deal with any other social issue or legal issue. It's guns, right? So, I mean, I watch all the committee meetings. I pay absolute attention to what the police are saying. I know all that stuff. I have clips of everything. I have clips of everything that these people say because I might need them, like right now, right? You know, so he tries to gaslight me. I'm like, what? That's not what they said. Now, to be fair, not every law enforcement officer that appeared in front of the Public Safety Committee in the last 2 years had the same opinion. Okay, some of them were what he would love, which is like, okay, we'll determine nobody gets anything. All Canadians, whether they are licensed or law-abiding citizens or contributors or whatever, they all get treated as if they're the criminals. So they're all going to get treated. We're going to change all the rules that, you know, that we would apply to criminals, but we're going to apply them to everybody. Like, how insane, right? We're going to create basically an open-air prison as long as you get your pornography and your drugs and, you know, and get locked down or whatever, and that's how we're running things now, you know? Because the thing is, if you give in to people that see the world in those, and I'm talking law enforcement too, and politicians that see the world in that, from that perspective, like, oh, I'm going to keep you safe by taking everything away from you. I'm going to keep you safe by you can't go anywhere. I'm going to keep you safe by I'm going to monitor you every aspect of your life just in case you screw up or whatever. Like if you agree with all that stuff, we've lost what made Canada the greatest country on earth, right? I was born here, right? Canada, I would argue with anybody back in the 90s, even the early 2000s, that Canada was the greatest country on earth. That's why I've never left. I have all kinds of options in my previous career to live wherever in the world that I wanted. But I stayed here because Canada's the best. Well, this is how you ruin it. This is how you create a place that people are trying to literally escape from. We have immigrants coming into Canada now that are turning around and going back to their countries, right? After seeing what Canada really looks like now. It's people like Tlaib Noor Mohammed and his behavior, his short-sighted narcissism, being in the position that he's in, that are contributing to the downfall of what made Canada the greatest place on earth, right? So anyway, it's just, you know, you have to resist that stuff. You have to fight against it if you want to save what made Canada such a special place. So anyway, yeah, it's just a very interesting, it's always a very interesting experience interacting with people like this, with people like Tlaib Nur Muhammad or Pam Damoff. And, you know, if you notice, if you've ever watched that hearing, you know, they had an expert there. I've said this before, right? But they're like, no, we need to destroy the reputation of this guy. He hasn't really done much, but we're going to destroy his reputation, hopefully for the rest of his life, so that nobody listens to his arguments. We can't win on the arguments. We need to destroy our political adversaries. And this is how the Trudeau government has gone right from when Trudeau showed up in like 2014 as the Liberal Party leader right to this afternoon. And people like Tlaib Nur Muhammad, they want to be in the crowd. So they'll talk to, you know, they'll get marching orders from someone as low, just as an organism like Justin Trudeau. And he'll be like, hey, boss, I'll do whatever it is. You want me to destroy somebody's career? Fine. You want me to take property from 2.5 million people that never did anything to deserve it? I don't care. You want me to vote to spend billions of dollars to drive our children and our grandchildren into debt, poverty in Canada? I'll do it, whatever. Do I got a seat at the table? Good enough for me, man. Like, that's what you're dealing with there. And it's clear. If that wasn't what you're dealing with, then Tlaib Nur Muhammad would have had the professionalism to say, hey, I don't agree 100% with the way that you guys go to market, you know, in the firearm advocacy business, but we're here to solve the problem of firearm-related violence because people are dying and whether or not this has anything to do with legal firearm ownership, okay? Let's set aside any partisan issues. Let's talk. We need to solve this. It's our job. We're being paid to solve this problem. Let's do it. And of course, I'd be like, this is awesome. But with people like this, it makes it incredibly challenging, in my opinion, near impossible to have that mature, calm, rational, honest conversation about firearm ownership and how important that is and firearm-related violence and how we can address those issues. Just with these people, it's just next to impossible. But anyway, we have plans to deal with this, I assure you, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to share those plans with you soon. Anyway, I've talked for so long. Thanks for putting up with me. I just think that it might be interesting seeing the perspective of having to deal with these people all day. It might be entertaining at some level. Anyway, thanks so much for your support. If you are interested in supporting the work that we do and the work that we're going to be doing this fall, you can do that by becoming a member or donating at firearmrights.ca. And make sure you follow us on our socials and be part of the CCFR social media army. We always need people to be out there posting the facts, engaging in calm, civil, honest debate to try to change the public's interpretation that's being presented to them by people like liberals, by people like Tlaib Nur Muhammad and Bill Blair and Justin Trudeau. We need to counter that narrative, and that's where you can really help us out too. Anyway, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.